Lawmakers are home from the Capitol for the August recess, and they're getting an earful. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with Jacksonville Congressman John Rutherford. Already getting your calls? Join us. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Then later in the hour, how Feeding Northeast Florida and Publix are teaming up to fight hunger here in our area. All of that and more just ahead. But first this hour, members of Congress are back in their districts for the month of August, touching base with constituents. And they're hearing about lots of issues, everything from the economy to the current push on Capitol Hill for new gun legislation, thoughts about the president, and a whole lot more. We are pleased right now to welcome North Florida Republican Representative John Rutherford to the show. He's in studio and taking your calls. Congressman Rutherford, good to have you on the show.
Melissa, good to be back with you. It's like old times.
Like old times, I know. I was thinking about that. You used to come in here all the time when you were Sheriff Rutherford.
Right, right.
The only sheriff in Congress.
Yes.
Isn't that the case?
That is true. Dave Reichert was up there with me. He was a sheriff from Washington State, and he retired last session. So.
Okay, and so you bring a unique perspective to so many issues in your current role as a former law enforcement leader. We're going to go to your calls in a few moments for Congressman John Rutherford. It's 549-2937 to join us. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. All right, let's begin with the latest we're hearing from President Trump on this current push in Congress for gun reform legislation. We learned yesterday that after speaking with the head of the NRA, the president said he's backing off his support on enhanced background check measures for gun purchases. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, we actually enhanced the background check system last session with the Fix Next bill that will require better reporting from federal agencies and others into that system. But if you look, Melissa, none of those background checks would have prevented many of the shootings that we are all mostly concerned about. And so, you know, when I drafted the Stop School Violence Act of 2018, I drafted that bill. We got the language ready, working with the Sandy Hook Promise Group. We had that language ready by, like, middle of January. I gave it to Ted Deutsch. One thing that I've done with every bill South Florida congressman. But one of the things that I've done with every bill that I've filed is I've reached across the aisle for in a bipartisan way to try and get others to work with me for a primary co-sponsor, not just a co-sponsor, but a primary. That means their name goes on that legislation as well. And so I gave it to Ted. He looked at it. He said, John, I love it. Put me on as a primary. So I then filed that bill January 30th. Exactly 2 weeks later, February 14th, we had the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Parkland, Florida, which is right in the middle of Ted's district. And so we were able to get that bill passed into law very quickly. But the key to that bill was it focused on the shooters and identified, if you remember, Melissa, when I was sheriff, I used to tell my men and women all the time, I don't want to be the best first responder to a mass casualty event. I want to prevent it before it occurs. And what the Stop School Violence Act did was it focused on those individuals that have a propensity to become active shooters. And so that's one reason I support these red flag laws that will do the same thing. The focus should not be on the guns. The focus should be on the individual that's pulling the trigger. And we need to find out who those people are. Because, look, whether they use an AR-15 or they use a Glock handgun, people are going to die. I want to prevent any of that from occurring.
Well, let me ask you as a follow-up. For example, in Dayton, Ohio, the shooter there was stopped by police in less than a minute.
Right.
Still, though, he and the police in Dayton did an outstanding job.
They absolutely did.
I'm from that town.
Right.
My parents were concerned that their loved ones could have been in the Oregon District that
right.
night. The police stopped that shooter in under a minute still.
Right.
The current argument in Congress is whether to restrict access to high-capacity magazines because Someone like that young man can kill so many people in such a short amount of time. Let me ask you about this, too. A few weeks ago, your Democratic counterpart in the House, Congressman Al Lawson, appeared on this program. Here's what he said about his GOP colleagues in the Congress when it comes to the issue of gun reform.
We have to face it. Many of my Republican colleagues are pretty much owned by the NRA, and they are afraid to go against the NRA because of opposition they will probably receive in the next election.
What's your reaction to that perception that you're beholden to the NRA, that the Republican representatives in the House and Senate won't embrace measures that are popular with the public, enhanced background checks, red flag laws, as you said you support, and other measures that the public is now increasingly calling for?
Listen, I don't think the NRA buys people. They certainly haven't bought me.
They've donated to you.
A few. No, they have.
Does that influence your vote?
I think they donate to me because I support the Second Amendment. I don't support the Second Amendment because the NRA wants me to. They come to me. And so, I support the Second Amendment. Now, on the high-capacity magazines, look, whether you limit it to 5 rounds or 10 rounds or whatever you may limit it to, look, I've done combat reloads. It takes less than a second to combat reload a semi-automatic pistol, for example.
But why should a civilian have access to 100-round drums, which is what this shooter in Dayton had? 100 rounds. Why? What about the argument that a growing number of Republicans are making, too, that these are weapons of war? These should not be made accessible to civilians, and you can still robustly preserve Second Amendment rights.
Right. How many 100-round magazines have been used in any of these shootings? And look, let's put these.
He got off dozens of shots in under a minute.
He could have done that without a 100-round drum or whatever magazine.
But if it saves even a few lives, isn't it worth it? Isn't it worth it?
Well, it's not going to save a few lives, changing that. What will save a few lives,
Melissa?
How
do you know that? There's a growing body of evidence to show that limiting access to high-capacity magazines can reduce the carnage that we're seeing on our streets, in our public places, in churches, in schools, in movie theaters. It's carnage. What about that?
The way to remove the carnage is to stop the individuals before they pick up a gun and become a mass shooter. Identify these individuals.
Can't we do both?
Every case, particularly in the schools, in almost every one of those cases, the couple weeks after these shootings, you hear these anecdotal stories come out. Nobody's really surprised who these individuals are when they do these things, especially in Parkland. There were a whole lot of failures in Parkland. So I think it's more important to go after the individual, and that's why I support these red flag laws. Mm-hmm. It's about identifying behavior and addressing that as opposed to addressing a gun. I have a whole safe full of guns. They've never killed anybody. It's not the guns, it's not the drums, it's the people. And that's the conversation, Melissa, that nobody on the left wants to have. Because then you have to talk about God. You got to talk about faith. You got to talk about values. They don't want to have those conversations.
Well, but what about the fact that there's bipartisan calls now for, as you said, stopping dangerous or disturbed people from accessing these weapons, and B, having a fresh conversation about access to military-grade weapons, and the perception that some of your colleagues will not embrace this due to fear of the NRA or the president or whomever preventing these kinds of common sense changes that the majority of Americans say they want?
Look, I don't think, first of all, I don't know that it's the majority of the Americans.
97% of Americans want better background checks. A majority of Americans want red flag laws.
And I support both of those.
But they won't pass the Senate. What about that? You're in the House. What about the obstruction in the Senate?
Well, listen, the background check bill, H.R. 8, that the Democrats passed out of the House this session, that's not a background check bill. That's a registration bill is what that is. And they try very, very backdoorishly to try and create these registrations for firearms. That's the problem with H.R. 8, and that's why I voted against it. Look, I support good background checks. What I don't support is creating a system where I have to take a gun. If I want to buy a gun from someone, we go down and we give it to an FFL dealer. He does a background check, and, oh, by the way, he registers that gun. That's a diversified registration, and we never want that in this country.
Okay. Let me ask you about another hot topic. Then we'll go to the calls, which are jammed, okay, by the way, for Congressman Rutherford.
Good.
Okay. You're a Republican, as everyone here knows, around town. That said, a majority of Democrats in the House now support impeaching this president. We're learning the House Intelligence Committee might use their access to counterintelligence secrets to guide a potential impeachment of the president. What's your reaction?
I think it's ridiculous. Look, I read the Mueller report. There was no collusion. There was no cooperation, coordination between the Trump campaign and those individual Russians who, through two means, you know, first they tried to tap into election systems. And so far, we don't know anywhere that they were successful in actually changing a vote. And the other thing they tried to do was influence elections through, you know, they bought, I think they're saying $100,000 or so worth of ads and that sort of thing, making it look like they were Americans, but they were really Russians trying to affect voter outcome. We are working very hard to now to preclude both of those from happening in the future.
What about the nearly a dozen instances of potential obstruction of justice Mueller identified in his report?
Well, none of those. In fact, Mueller said, look, at some point in the future, a special counsel may decide to indict a sitting president. But this is not the case.
You didn't read this as an impeachment referral. Those that are championing impeachment, granted they're on the opposite side than you, they read the Mueller report as an impeachment referral.
I disagree completely. I think Mueller made it very clear in that report that he could not and would not, regardless of the LOC, he was not going to indict the president on this case. That's why he said, you know, it may happen in the future, but it can't on this case, and it won't on this case.
Okay, let's go to lots of calls now for Congressman Rutherford. John Rutherford is in town for the August recess. We are taking your calls at 549-2937. Lamar is in Mandarin. Lamar, good morning.
Melissa, thank you for taking my call and the community service that you perform. And I want to extend a thank you also to Congressman Rutherford for his service to the city of Jacksonville.
Thank you, Lamar.
But Congressman, I will not vote for you again.
Okay.
To listen to your insensitive and defensive comments concerning gun control, I am nauseated, sir. I mean, when we've had 250 mass shootings in the United States so far this year, when will it be enough? 500? 1,000? Why don't you do something, sir? You were elected by these people to defend us and to do things good for the community. And I see none of that. I hear you backpedaling on all these suggestions that Melissa is making to you about things that you could do. I am disgusted with you, sir.
And I'm not backpedaling on anything. Listen, I supported the Fix Next bill last session, which strengthened the background check. I support the red flag laws, like the one that was passed in Florida. I agree with all of that.
There's a lot of anger out there on this issue, though. Are you sensing that as you come back to the district?
Yeah. Well, I think this has always been a big issue, particularly for those of us in law enforcement.
Right. Just a week or so ago, a shooter in Philadelphia opened fire on a number of police officers.
Right.
Just the latest incident.
Right. We've had to deal with this for a long time.
Tom on the West Side, go ahead, Tom.
Out of control.
Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Yes, good morning to you. I was just thinking that, but it has always been a problem, but it is moving to epic proportions and getting totally out of control. My suggestion, as I mentioned when Mr. Lawson was on the air, is that we tax military-style weapons, the AKs, the AR-15s, as luxury items with a luxury tax. I would also suggest that we go with a bullet tax to make the ammunition more expensive. And as certain items like bulletproof vest and suppressors only serve to give these deranged murderers a tactical advantage over law enforcement, I think these things need to be banned from civilian sale as well. We need to take measures to make us safer. I mean, that is part of why we have government, is to ensure our safety.
Tom, thank you. Congressman.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure that people need bulletproof vests out there. I concur with that. The issue on the suppressors, though, you know, when I was sheriff, I never signed for a suppressor because I didn't want them being utilized against law enforcement. But I will tell you, I don't know of a case where they ever have been.
What about his notion, though?
If there's a case out there, tell me about that case, because I don't know of a suppressor ever being used against the police.
What about taxing, not just weapons, but bullets, that idea, to while ensuring that you can still legally buy them, it might perhaps be a deterrent toward those that could use these weapons in an irresponsible way.
Yeah, that's an attempt to bypass the Second Amendment and restrict gun use through making guns unusable because you can't get ammunition. Now, there are some guns already. For example, fully automatic firearms that are, you know, they have a Class 3 designation, takes a special permit, special sign-off to own those guns.
Why not expand that to other military-grade weapons that have been used in the majority of mass shootings?
Well, because they are semi-automatic weapons. For example, I also supported the president in banning the bump stocks because they literally made a gun function like a fully auto gun externally, but if you had changed that gun internally to make it function like that, that would be against the law.
Why not change that law?
They're now outlawed.
No, but I mean, why not look at the existing laws that still allow for America to be an outlier across the entire developed world on this issue? We have more gun violence and gun homicide than any other nation on earth, except Yemen.
No, we don't.
We're like number 27. An extraordinarily high number of gun-related homicides.
You need to check those numbers. We are number 27.
Sir. We do. And your constituents are not happy about it. I have a whole queue of calls here, and this is all they want to talk about.
Right.
I say this with respect. Right. This, more than any other issue, is what our listeners want
and
to talk to you
why
about.
That's why I support the red flag laws.
All right, let's go to Jerry in St. Augustine. Jerry, go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. Congressman, I'll identify myself as a lifelong Republican. I'm 71 years old, and I voted, you know, mostly Republican from the first time I got my voting card. Mm-hmm. I'm also a gun owner. I own several guns. However, I have no need, and by the way, I did serve during the Vietnam, I have no need or desire to have extended magazines in my rifles. And at this time, I don't want to participate in the tribalism, us versus them, you know, in whatever my party says.
Right.
It's more a question of national interest this time, sir.
Oh,
please,
I agree.
Look in the mirror and see. Go ahead.
And Jerry, that's why I think it's so important that we get the facts. Look, when you say that there's more gun violence in America than anywhere in the world, that's not factually correct.
It is.
There are more people dying. It is not.
In the developed world, it certainly is. Absolutely.
You said in the world.
I said in the Western developed world.
Right.
We are at the top. Yes, we are.
65% of the gun violence in America is suicide.
That's right. More people die by suicide than homicide by guns, which...
That's
also buttresses the argument of, as you said, limiting access to weapons to those that are not in a position to use them responsibly.
We have about 30,000 firearm deaths a year. 65% of those are suicide. About 5,100 of those remaining are actually criminal means, you know, shootings at clubs and schools and those kind of things, about around 5,100. Now, of those, 25% of that 5,100 occur in almost like four cities, Chicago, Baltimore, you know, L.A. So we have to put this in perspective, too. And I think when you start trying to, not you, but when people try to use this to overcome the Second Amendment, I've got problems with that. And that's what these taxes on bullets and all of ammunition.
And many of those ideas aren't likely to pass through the process. But what about the
Now, what,
why will those not pass
through the process? You know why? Because the vast majority of Americans disagree with it.
The vast majority of Americans, including gun owners and NRA members, believe that we could do a better job with this issue. What about that?
The vast majority of Americans disagree with that process. They don't want to see the Second Amendment diluted.
No, they're saying you can preserve the Second Amendment while better ensuring the public safety of the American people.
We are, through the background checks, the fix-nicks that we passed, through the red flag laws that I hope we will get passed when we go back, put that on a national stage.
All right, I'm so sorry to cut you off, but let me get some more calls on the air. Dave in Nassau County, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you, Representative Rutherford, for attending this session. I have a question. I read the Mueller report, and according to the Justice Department guidelines, they said that they would not indict a sitting president. And this president clearly would have been indicted for all the efforts at obstruction of justice had it not been for the fact that he is a sitting president. If the only reason why you're not in jail is because you're president, perhaps you shouldn't be president.
Dave, that is not what the Mueller report said, and that is not what Mr. Mueller said. What he said was...
That is absolutely what he said. He said, in essence, that they have a Justice Department guideline that says that they will not indict a sitting president. That's the only reason why this president wasn't indicted.
He also said that any special counsel in the future might decide to indict a sitting president, but this is not the case where that could occur.
Where did it say that? Please tell me which page.
He made that comment with Bill Barr.
Bill Barr was appointed by the president to lead justice. What's your reaction to those who see him as having a higher loyalty toward protecting this president rather than defending the Constitution?
I think Bill Barr has a higher commitment to the Constitution than to the president. And I think what you're going to see, I've asked this a million times, tell me what the predicate act was that caused the United States intelligence departments to investigate and spy on a not just a citizen of the United States, but a presidential candidate.
It began with Five Eyes. It began with FVEY. That's the hashtag, Five Eyes. It began with Australia, who keeps their eyes on actors overseas that they perceive could be a threat to the United States. They reported to our federal authorities that George Papadopoulos was having what they perceived to be highly unusual conversations with Russian nationals. It spread from there. What about that?
No, it absolutely did not.
Yes, it did.
In fact,
yes, it did.
Well, I disagree. I disagree.
That's in the record. It's factual. This is what happened.
But
the
there was
five
no
alliance
grounds.
We have
when they
with
went to
Britain,
the FISA court,
Australia,
and this is
Canada,
why I think Bill Barr is going to wind up putting some FBI and AG people probably in jail, because when they went to that FISA court, I think they lied.
What do you think they lied about?
I think they lied through omission. They have an affirmative responsibility to provide exculpatory information to the FISA judge. From all appearances, that never happened. They never told him that this came from the DNC, this Steele dossier. They never mentioned that information, that GPS was actually hired by the DNC. Never mentioned any of that.
Well, for the record, the Jeb Bush campaign, it's alleged, initially commissioned the Steele dossier and the Washington Free Beacon, a conservative leading newspaper.
Well, I think all of this is still under investigation, and it's all going to come out. And that's why I support Bill Barr in what he's doing. He's looking at the investigation.
Okay. Let me ask you on another note. As we talk about the president, there's admittedly, President Trump has a sky-high approval rating among Republicans, and certainly with the majority of your constituents in your district. That said, in recent weeks, some high-profile Republicans have said that privately they know that members of the House and Senate are weary of this president, his tweets, coming out with ideas like trying to buy Greenland, for example. They say people in the House and Senate, like you, privately complain about him but won't publicly say anything against him. What about that?
Well, look, when I disagree with the president, I say so. But I talk about policy. I don't get into the all the individual back and forth that goes on. That's not what I'm up there to do. I'm up there to serve the American public. And so when I disagree with him on policy, I step out and say so.
Where do you see disagreements with this president, and where do you support him?
Well, I can tell you I support him on the economic front. Mainly because a lot of people, first of all, we're seeing the success of that. The whole Tax Cut Jobs Act that is putting more money back in people's pockets. The CBO, and I actually have to defend, that vote to my Republican base because they're like, well, you created this deficit. But what's never told in that, Melissa, is the fact that when the CBO scored that bill, they scored it with a 1.9% GDP growth. So, and that's for the next 10 years. Well, we're already growing at, three plus. And so the Ways and Means Office will tell you every percentage point above 1.9 is an additional $274 billion in revenue. And so in 3 or 4 years, that deficit will be covered. Now, in addition to that, When we get the USMCA, the new NAFTA, if you will, we get that passed, that'll be an additional $68 billion to our GDP. And here's why these things are so important, like the tariffs and the actual trying to balance the trade field with China and Canada and Mexico. Look, China, in fact, there was an article that came out just the other day that, but I think Australia ran it, that the United States couldn't win a peer-to-peer war with China in Asia. And so when you look at, I had an opportunity to go to the Pacific Rim exercises where our military was performing in the Pacific. And, I'm told the surface vessels that China has, they have three times our surface vessels. They have five times our subsurface vessels. They have three to four times our airplanes in that Pacific theater. Now, they're doing all of this with our money, with that trade imbalance that we had for the last 20 years. I tell folks, we've been in a trade war with China. We just haven't been fighting back. Thank God this president understands that it's a national security issue.
What about the fact, though, that we as Americans pay those tariffs? We're the ones bearing the brunt of that, as consumers and of the goods that we're buying. And what about the argument that in the end no one wins in a trade war?
You're right, they don't. And that's why we need to fight back and end this trade war that China's been hitting us with for the last 20 years. That's why we need to end it.
Is this the smartest way, though, to go about it?
It's the only way to go about it.
There have been a number of economists that have said that this trade war could send us right into a recession. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree, because I think the president understands. And look at our farmers, for example. He's providing them the backstop that they need to get through this.
Isn't that socialism? Picking winners and losers in the economy, like a state-planned economy, the way Russia used to do?
Well, it's not an individual farmer. It's farmers that are impacted by...
But you're picking winners and losers in the economy. You're propping up an industry.
We're mitigating damage that's being done by trying to get China to the table to negotiate fairly.
Okay. I'm going to get to a few tweets and emails. Okay, there's so many tweets. So, folks, I realize I can't get to them all. Here's one from a listener. What will it take for Republicans to see the light on gun and ammunition control? Thousands of children and innocent people are being gunned down on our soil. If a foreign country killed this many of its citizens annually, they'd be outraged. And there are many other tweets getting at the issue of gun legislation, many. Right. I just want to mention that because I can't read them all.
Yeah.
Here is a tweet or an email. The congressman has called Black Lives Matter a hate group. Why has he not used similar language to describe white supremacy? Isn't this domestic terrorism? Now, a leak that was published in the Tampa Bay Times the other day said that you and your colleagues in the House on the Republican side were given talking points about this issue, and that you are instructed to downplay the role of white nationalism in our gun violence problem and say that both sides are equally to blame. What about that?
I was in law enforcement for 41 years. Have you ever heard me support white nationalism? Come on. That's an absurd accusation.
What about the fact, though, that according to the FBI director, the majority of these shootings are influenced by white nationalism, and that the FBI is engaged in that as perhaps their top domestic security issue right now?
Well, I don't have an opinion on their opinion, but what I can tell you is the Black Lives Matter group and any group, not Black Lives Matter, but any group that marches down the streets of New York chanting, "What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want it now?" That's a hate group.
Let me ask you one more question, because many of our listeners want to know if, and they asked this of Al Lawson too, by the way,
mm-hmm.
Are you holding a town hall meeting while you're home this month?
No.
Why not?
Because they're dysfunctional. What I do, my responsibility to my constituents is to make myself available. And I do that every day, day in and day out. Anybody can come to my office, and they do. I speak at every civic group in this district, from Nassau to St. John's County. I spend all of my time, well, most of my time, doing that. And those are very productive meetings where we get to share real information without all of the theatrics that others want to bring into that town hall situation. I refuse to do it. I'm not going to play by that rule. If you want to see me, come to my office. We can talk, or go to one of these other meetings that I'm in. Glad to meet and talk with anybody and everybody. But I'm not going to go where folks want to get on TV for their 15 seconds of fame and give them that platform. I'm not going to do it.
Well, since this was a bit of a virtual town hall, we appreciate you coming and sharing and connecting with all the constituents out there while you're home. And we were also grateful to have our other local representative, Al Lawson, during the recess. Congressman John Rutherford, thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. It's always great to be with you.
Thanks so much. And up next, UNF expands offerings in logistics and supply chain management. Why that's important for this region, we'll be right back.
What can $9.90 get you? Access to the very best in science, nature, and history docs. Introducing WJCT's newest member benefit, PBS Passport Plus Curiosity Stream. Now for the first time, you can get access to all of the great documentaries on PBS's Passport, and also get access to the incredible collection of Curiosity Stream, the new documentary service created by the founder of the Discovery Channel. A $9.90 monthly contribution gets you ongoing access to both Curiosity Stream and PBS's Passport service. It's a member benefit unlike any we've ever created, and available only from WJZT. Sign up today to get all the documentaries you love anytime, anywhere, on any device. Passport plus Curiosity Stream together for $9.90 per month.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, UNF has just launched a new Master's of Science in Logistics and Supply Chain Management. Very important for our region since we are a logistical hub. We're pleased to welcome Dr. Don Russell, Associate Professor of Transportation and Logistics, Graduate Programs Director for the Coggin College of Business at UNF. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
And Amy Bishop, Graduate Advisor for Coggin College of Business. Good morning. Dr. Russell, let's start with you. Let's first explain, what is logistics and supply chain management?
Well, you know, from a consumer perspective, it's the right product at the right place at the right time. We go into Publix and we expect that Special K to be on the shelf. We expect that tomato soup to be on the shelf. That's logistics working well.
Okay, so then knowing this, UNF is jumping into this growing field, Amy. Tell us about this new graduate program.
So we launched the inaugural class of the Master's of Logistics and Supply Chain Management this fall. We have 23 admits for this class, and it's an exciting time. It addresses a need in our region for master's level coursework.
Why would someone go back to school to get a master's in logistics? How can they use that degree?
A master's in logistics, I like to say, is a gift to yourself. It's an investment in yourself, and for many, it's an investment in the company they're working for. Many of our students that come back to school, there are tuition reimbursement programs within the company. So they invest in themselves, and they invest in their preparation for that next promotion. One of the goals of this program is to prepare students for that next promotion.
And how do you see this new graduate offering fitting into the logistics scene and supply chain scene? We heard from Congressman Rutherford in the first segment, you know, we've got a port here, we've got where that the confluence mm-hmm. of 95 and I-10.
Right.
There is a growing sphere here in logistics and supply chain mm-hmm. management. How does UNF fit into that?
You know, global thinking, long-term strategic global thinking, that is a key focus in the pedagogical philosophy of the program.
Okay. So you're thinking globally and acting mm-hmm. locally. Mm-hmm. How popular do you expect this to be?
Very popular. You know, one of the things that is a bit counterintuitive is as global trade grows, demand for local transportation grows exponentially. You bring large ships into the port, you kick off a host of domestic moves. Mm-hmm. So they're very tightly connected.
And what are some of the features of this degree? Tell us a little bit more about what students will get into.
So they're going to cover subjects from logistics to supply chain management while also being able to balance the degree with a full-time career. So we offer classes that are all at night. We are also looking at online and hybrid options for our classes. So it works really well into the balance of work and in school.
Okay. And do you anticipate this to grow? You said how many students do you have right now?
23 admits for this fall.
23. So mm-hmm. and then the first year. So
yes. And actually the degree was only approved at the end of May. So we had 2 months to market. We have a launch class of 23 students. We have a few admitted for the spring already, and we do see it growing. We are working with companies to partner with companies and build the already thriving logistics thriving logistics workforce here in Jacksonville.
Now, you've got some professors who've worked at major companies like Walmart, GE, Lockheed Martin.
Yes.
And then you're looking for corporate alignment, too. What major companies do you anticipate being part of this at UNF in the future?
Well, we partner now with Crowley, Tote, Steinmart, large companies here in the region, and large companies, you know, around the nation.
All right. So 23 studying now. What are the classes like?
So the classes right now, we're doing a survey of transportation. So it's an introduction foundational course and making decisions with data class. So how to use all the data that they're going to encounter in their daily jobs.
That's really what it's about, isn't it? Understanding and moving data around. That can be kind of a big concept to think about.
It is.
But it can be applied in a lot of different jobs, can't it?
It can. And you'd be surprised, the students will learn throughout the class how it can be applied in their daily careers.
And how is logistics factoring into some of the biggest challenges we're going to have in the coming decades in this country? You name it, climate change, economic challenges, national security issues. This is kind of the secret sauce for so many big problems, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, many of those things drive trade routes, and logistics helps to manage trade routes. So as trade routes shift, logistics shifts with it. That right product, right place at right time, we've been chasing that goal for many decades. We do that in a fast-evolving global business environment.
And by the way, this master's program at UNF in logistics, it's one of only two in Florida now. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
So UNF is all grown up now.
It is an exciting time at UNF and at the Coggin College of Business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what else is happening at Coggin in addition to this?
Well, we have a growing career management center. So students come to school to get a job, and we've had significant growth in our career management center, and we've been hiring many new international faculty.
Okay, so this is exciting news at UNF. 23 students right off the bat as they launch a new Master's of Science in Logistics and Supply Chain Management, a key part of our local economy here on the First Coast. So kudos to you, Dr. Don Russell and Amy Bishop, both with the Coggin College of Business at the University of North Florida. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, one company that knows a lot about logistics is Publix, right? We'll speak to them in a moment because Publix is supporting Hunger Action Month here in Florida. We will tell you how and how they're partnering with Feeding Northeast Florida to do it. That's in just a few minutes here on First Coast Connect. Don't go away.
WJCT for a private member reception and screening of the new Downton Abbey movie on Thursday, September 19th at the Cinemark Tinseltown. 6 p.m. reception and 7 p.m. screening. $50 donation. Costumes are encouraged. For more information, go to wjct.org/events.
Four 400 years ago, people from Africa came to America in chains. In Ghana, we meet a man who was transported from America to Africa, deported in shackles by ICE.
Handcuff your hands, your waist, and your leg. You can't move, you can't do anything.
Ghanaians and Americans consider a shared history of slavery and how it affects both groups of people today. It's On the World. this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Recent mass shootings have accelerated calls for more red flag or extreme risk laws, but they're far more likely to be used in cases of threatened suicide.
I don't for a minute believe that red flag laws will in any meaningful way interrupt the epidemic of mass shootings in this country.
How red flag laws are being used in Vermont this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
America is becoming increasingly urban, but more of its rural newcomers say they're ready to move back home. This trend has many people who grew up outside a city feeling that their small town is both the starting point and the finish line. What have they been achieving by going back? Returning to rural America, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Hunger Action Month kicks off in September. And grocery giant Publix is doing its part, partnering up with Feeding Northeast Florida. Dwayne Stevens is Media and Community Relations Manager for Publix, and he's on the line. Hey, Dwayne.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Melissa?
I'm really well, thanks. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, tomorrow, Feeding Northeast Florida is teaming up with Publix and presenting a donation to food insecure individuals and families in our area. What's going to be happening?
Well, I'll tell you, if you allow me to just kind of level set just a little bit, you know, as you may know, Publix being your favorite grocery store, we've always been intolerant of waste and involved as responsible citizens in our community. Just to share us a little bit about what's been going on at the retail front, by establishing our perishable recovery program, we've been able to stay connected to our local communities and our area food banks in a more significant way. In 2007, we started our in-store perishable recovery program. This program began with our Feeding America network of food banks. The fresh departments across our stores, including deli, meat, produce, and dairy, we gather perishable, wholesome foods that are safe for consumption but unsellable, and we donate them to member food banks. For example, in 2010, this program was launched company-wide. So to date, with over 1,200 Publix locations in our total enterprise, in seven southeastern states, we have donated over 477 million pounds of wholesome food, which equates to 373 million meals. And that is significant. But Melissa, you know, there's still a lot of work to get done. I know you agree with that.
Right. I mean, there are so many people in our area who are food insecure. You know, they don't know where their next meal is going to come from. These are working people,
right?
People that sometimes have two and three jobs. And
absolutely.
So the food industry, the grocery industry, how do you see a grocery giant like Publix and some of the other of your competitors trying to do more to address that? Because certainly the need is out there.
Absolutely. And we all have an obligation as individuals, as a corporation, especially being proud of a corporation that I'm a part of as an associate that is so laser focused on healthy communities. And we speak about here locally in Jacksonville in Northeast Florida. We really value the work that Feeding Northeast Florida has done locally. And Publix is, we're just pleased to be a leading community partner with their work. In 2018 alone, over 55 local Publix stores have donated wholesale value-wise, $8.5 million of high-quality food to Feeding Northeast Florida and its member partners, which equates to over 5 million pounds of food. So just to give you a better sense of the amount of food that we've donated, this means Publix has provided over 4.3 million meals to parents, children, seniors, and other individuals facing food insecurity right here in our community. And the meal gap in Northeast Florida is 50 million meals. So by providing 4.3 million meals, Publix, we're working hard to do our part to fight hunger here in Northeast Florida. And here's another staggering statistic, you know, that really hits you on the heartstring, is that there are 75,000 children in Northeast Florida are food insecure. That means one out of every four children or students are hungry. most of these students receive free or reduced price breakfast and lunch at school during the week. However, there is usually no reliable source for food over weekend for these children. But public health corporation and as a community, we all need to have a call of action to do what we can do to help solve that weekend meal gap.
So with all of that said, you're going to be doing, I misspoke a minute ago, a check presentation next Wednesday to Feeding Northeast Florida. That's an organization, ma'am. Anyone can help to try to help with this.
Absolutely. We want to just give a call to action to the community as a whole to do their part. And we know there's a lot of great organizations here in Northeast Florida, a lot of fine corporations and individuals that are doing their part. We want them to continue to do what they can to help in this this area of food insecurity. And as you mentioned, there's more good news to come. So stay tuned for an additional announcement that Public Supermarkets and Public Supermarkets Charities is going to be announcing as we kick off Hunger Action Month in September.
We will keep our eyes out for that. And thank you for your time, Dwayne. We appreciate you being with us.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me, Alyssa. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
He's Dwayne Stevens, Media and Community Relations Manager for Publix. Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And we always value your feedback. Send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tomorrow, the latest on the push to privatize JEA. We'll speak with a top executive at the utility. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, just keep listening for some great music. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.